With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then, Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now, Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for Cover 2 Broncos. Just a couple dudes breaking down scheme, film, and the numbers. Now, your hosts, Joe Rowles and Jeff Essery.
Welcome back to another episode of Cover 2 Broncos. I'm Jeff Essery.
And I am Joe Rowles. How is it going?
It's going good. We are in the throes of off-season. And just so the podcast will be dropping on a Thursday, but pro days were just some of the early returns were coming in yesterday. We won't talk draft today. That'll be in the future, but gosh, did you see J.C. Horn's numbers come through and Patrick Surtain's numbers? Like, look at those corner numbers are ridiculous right now.
I don't know if you're just baiting me or not, because I feel like I'm being a hater with these two. No, like, this has been a thing. Again, I'm not doing this for a brand thing. Like, people throw that at me now. They're like, oh, you're just hating because it's your brand. I'm like, no, it's not. It's both J.C. Horn and Patrick Surtain, like, had this amazing workout, but neither one of them did three cones or short shuttles. And I hate it because the biggest question about both of them is their change of direction. Like, yeah. I know Patrick Surtain can run. Like, I'm not worried about his long speed. I'm worried about the fact that, like, when he's playing off coverage, can he click and close fast enough to, like, make a tackle in the Broncos' defense? And the fact that, and granted, again, like, drills like this don't answer that question in and of themselves, but it provides you context. And as a general rule, and I was talking to another draft guy about this, PFS Austin Gale, and he was, and I mentioned to him, I was like, dude, it drives me nuts that guys skip these workouts. And he's like, here's the thing. Agents are too smart. Like, if they think the numbers aren't going to be good, they're not going to do it because, like, then the NFL team just doesn't know.
Yeah.
But the fact that they didn't do those drills, to me, it's a red flag.
Yeah. Well, but, and also, like, you get the perfect numbers on your vertical and your 40, and you're like, look, I'm going to wrap it in. You know, like, you don't want anything overshadowing that workout because it's a headline workout, you know, and it gets people's attention. And that's the biggest thing that you want out of this process. I mean, I'm on the other side, or I'm with you, and, you know, could be called a hater as well. But, like, my thing looking at those numbers is like, can they cover? Like, I don't care what they run. Can they cover? And they can, you know,
and they both can. Yeah. Yeah.
You go to the tape and they can. And so that's the biggest question, but it is kind of eye popping the numbers for sure.
And again, we're not going to I'm not going to browbeat you with draft stuff too much, but I have to say this because so many people have been asking me this today. Yes. I do think that J.C. Horn is a first round cornerback. Yes. I would not be upset if the Broncos took him, But the big question I have about both Sertan and J.C. Horn more so, is their coverage off, not pressed up on the line of scrimmage? And the problem, like quote-unquote problem, is Fangio last year and most years doesn't ask his corners to press a lot. You and I have both watched this tape with Prince Amukamara. He does do it. Like, if the corner is better pressing, he will do it. But typically, the defense is not designed to do that. So both of them, they do get a red flag for me for that. That's the only thing.
And it'll be interesting, I think, and to pivot over to kind of our topic today of just overarching offseason and the moves that have been made. I mean, frankly, I haven't dug a ton into the draft yet because I wanted to see how the offseason shook out, to see kind of what position groups, because, I mean, really cornerback at number 9 is, I'm not going to say it's off the table given the way that they've signed guys in free agency, but it makes it way less of a sure thing. Like, without Ronald Darby and Kyle Fuller being brought in, they were going cornerback at number 9. If they weren't going cornerback, right? You had to. Now they have so much more flexibility, and we're probably, you know, before the Kareem Jackson news, I was talking, okay, well, what about safety now? And then Kareem Jackson gets signed. And so it just goes to show, like, things, you really do have to wait and see how everything comes together as you lead up to the draft. And so that's what we wanted to talk about today, because it does feel like we're kind of at a point where the roster is beginning to get solidified. It doesn't mean that they're not going to continue to make moves, and we'll talk about that, particularly at the quarterback position. But there's been enough moves made that really the Broncos roster is starting to shape up. And I mean, I was on a radio spot Monday morning, and the question was kind of, you know, hey, what other, you know, are they going to pivot over to the offense? What other holes do they have to fill? Cause they've been so heavy on defense. And, you know, not to do a spoiler alert or whatever at the beginning of the podcast, but I mean, they feel pretty damn solid right now. You know, like that's my conclusion over it. You know, we'll talk through all the details and everything, but there's not a lot of just gaping holes right now across the Broncos roster, except obviously that big glaring one at quarterback, depending on where you fall on can you ride with Drew Lock this season. But other than that, I mean, George Payton, I think, has done a great job setting Denver up for in the draft to really do whatever they want to do.
And I think it's kind of interesting because back when George Payton was hired, I know I was really concerned that he was going to go cheap, in part because of the way it was being reported of like, oh, he might just bring a couple guys back, kind of ride out the offseason and see what's up because it's his first year. And it's like, that would have been terrible, like from a Broncos perspective, because cornerback was such a huge need. But not only did he go out and get Ronald Darby, and again, I have concerns about Ronald Darby. I wrote my piece for it. The big question for me is soft tissue injuries. I know what he said. He's I don't have the quote right in front of me, but he did an interview with Mike Kliss from 9 News, and he was talking about how after Philadelphia, he changed his diet, did more outside the facility, and that's like a big part of why he was healthy in Washington. And again, that may very well be true. But the thing is, all like he thinks that, he believes that, and it may very well be true. But we also still have his career history dating back to 2015 that he has been hurt. So I do have some concern about it. But in terms of on the field, he's a great signing. And not only that, but this year he only cost $4 million against the cap. So in a year where the cap went down, not only did George Payton collect all these guys and bring all these guys back, but the way he maneuvered the cap, the Broncos still have somewhere between $20 and $30 million in cap space, which is insane.
Let's talk about that, because it really starts to compound when you look across all the moves. And you and I were talking about this right before we turned it on, turned the podcast on. So you look at Ronald Darby. He's $10 million average a year that he'll get over the course of 3 years. And at least he'll probably see the first 2 years based on the way the guarantees are structured. Now, you know, who knows on the third. But the thing with Darby is he's 27 this year. And so he's actually a younger guy that you pick up in free agency. But so average of $10 million a year, but he only counts $4 million against the cap this year. And so Denver is kicking a lot into the next 2 years. He's worth 13. He's going to have a $13 million cap number in the next 2 years. So that's Darby. That's number one. And then you go over to Shelby Harris's contract, and it's a very similar story. He very well could see, I think he'll see the first 2 years of his deal based on the way the contract is structured. He may not see that third year. He turns 32. Denver could save $9 million by cutting him. So, you know, there's flexibility there, mm-hmm. but he's only worth $4 million against the cap this year. And so the next 2 years he'll be having $11 to $12 million cap number. And then you were talking the Justin Simmons numbers, right, Joe? So let's pull those up as well. So that's Shelby Harris at a $9 million a year, only costing $4 million. That's Ronald Darby at a $10 million a year, only costing $4 million. And then Justin Simmons signs, you know, kind of resets the safety market and signs a contract worth around $15 million per year. And, you know, we'll see what happens with his. He turns 30 and 31 on the back 2 years of his deal when some of the guarantees start to fall off. So, you know, Denver has flexibility, obviously, but at least the first 2 years are pretty much locked based on guaranteed money. And he's only going to be counting against the cap for 5.7 this year at a $15 million average per year. So that means Denver is really, really backloading every one of these contracts. One, because of the, I would assume, because of the lowered cap number overall this year based on the kind of the COVID cap. Two, based on, I think everybody in the league is projecting the cap to really explode after this year. Mm-hmm. And maybe three, maybe they're planning some more moves, right? Maybe they're trying to stay flexible for a big move potentially still this year.
And that's – so that I feel like that hangs over all of this. And it's there's a lot to unpack with it, and I'm afraid I'm going to butcher it, so I want to start out here just because, like, we don't know the allegation. Like, we don't know what's going on with Deshaun Watson. Like, we have to say that up front. I don't know. I'm not trying to defend Deshaun Watson. I'm not saying it's a conspiracy. I'm not like I've had people do like people have been all it's crazy, man. It's been like this for a week now. All I am saying, and I've been saying this on Twitter, the same thing. We don't know, but you look at the way the Broncos have maneuvered the cap in free agency to this point. Every time George Payton has gone to make a big move, he's restructured a deal or cut somebody or like right before they reworked the deals for Justin Simmons and went out to sign Kyle Fuller, they cut Nick Vinette. They restructured Brandon McManus and Mike Purcell. So he created cap space to sign these guys. And the way it worked, it almost looked like the way they were handling it, it almost was like the Broncos were treating it like they were up against the cap ceiling this whole time. They weren't. At no point were the Broncos actually capped out. They entered the offseason with essentially $30 million in cap space. They still have $30 million in cap space. So that's like been a thing kind of in the back of my mind this whole offseason to this point. And then obviously the allegations came out very serious. And again, believe women. Like we just don't know. Like you have to like keep that part of it in mind. But the thing that I'm just kind of like sharing this based on like what I've seen in John McClain, who covers Houston for the Houston Chronicle, basically said, there were teams and the Texans were looking to start fielding offers to trade Deshaun Watson. And their hope was to retrieve 3 first round picks, 2 second round picks and a defensive player. There is a belief from McClain that there were multiple teams willing to do that. There has been reports throughout, like since the allegations came out, that teams are very closely following the situation because, and again, with the belief that if Deshaun Watson is clear of this, and again, I'm not saying he is, but if he is, teams would again start to try and acquire him. And you just look at what the Broncos have done right now. They've essentially patched every single position that looked like there was a question, except for linebacker and quarterback. But there's no linebackers in free agency. And again, I'm not trying to hate on Eric Wilson. I know some people really like Eric Wilson. But there's not big ticket linebackers in free agency. And at this point, there's not a big ticket quarterback left. The big ticket guys were Cam Newton and Ryan Fitzpatrick. They're both gone. The biggest free agent quarterbacks at this point is Alex Smith, if you think he's healthy enough to still play, or Chase Daniel, who's a career backup, who's made a lot of money being a career backup. And I'm actually open to Chase Daniel as like a backup slash mentor type for Drew Lock if they go that route. But I don't think they're saving $20 million in cap space to sign Chase Daniel.
Yeah, and so I think the biggest question lingering out, and I think you put it well, Joe, is what is Denver planning to do with that cap space? And, you know, you could make the argument that they're staying poised for all possibilities.
I think that's what they're doing. I'm not saying they're locked into Watson. I'm saying that they're keeping the door open.
Yeah, and you know that's consistent with a lot of the reporting that's been put out all off season, is that if he became available, that was a big if. You know, if the price was right, that was a big if Denver would be interested, right? Like, they would be interested in any avenue to make their team better, and George Payton would be aggressive in that area. And so I think this is the team, you know, leaving that option potentially open from a cap space perspective. And what is there to lose, really, is if it doesn't pan out, you roll over a lot of that cap space into next year, and you're kicking your money into that next year anyway. So you just roll it over to help out, and you expect to have a larger cap next year anyway. And so I do think that it's a good approach by Denver.
Me too.
If you weren't hedging and wanting to maybe leave the door open a little bit for Watson, I potentially would have liked to see them try to stack a little bit more of the money in this year, just because it's a lot. Like, you're backloading a lot of those deals. But also, when you look at the contracts, I mean, we said it with Shelby Harris, who knows about Darby, but there's a couple of these that I'm not sure that they get to their full deal.
Same.
Shelby Harris, for sure. I don't think Shelby Harris sees the third year of his contract.
I think Shelby Harris's contract is going to end up being really dependent on what happens with Draymond Jones and McTelvin Ajim. Yeah. And again, I love Shelby Harris. I'm not trying, like, again, and again, I only say this because I get a lot of messages about this stuff. It's not personal. At this point in the offseason, like,
Twitter feed, man. What kind of messages are you getting?
I'm just saying, like, it's our job to analyze this. Like, I'm just saying, like, I'm looking at this from the perspective of team building. The way Shelby Harris's contract is structured, if they end up having to pay Draymond Jones market setting kind of money, if they have to move on from Shelby Harris, they can do so to do that. And I feel like that's how he planned this.
Yeah, I mean, Shelby Harris in the last year of his deal is going to be 32 years old too. And so it's a similar situation to what you had this year with Jarrell Casey. He was due a lot of money. There wasn't any guaranteed money on it. He was older, coming off an injury. And so if the team could move on from him, they would. And so, you know, it depends on how he plays, and I hope he plays well for the next couple of years. And good on him for cashing in and earning the contract that he did. But I just think it's unlikely, given what we've seen from the, like, I've seen enough in the league to think that, I don't know that Shelby Harris will get his third year, which is fine, because he'll make good money in those first two, and he got his guaranteed money, really. He got a good chunk of guaranteed out of those first 2 years. And so with that, let's dig into the specifics of each move. Was there anything that surprised you? What was maybe your favorite move so far of what George Payton has done?
I mean, signing Kyle Fuller right off. And again, like, you and I have been pining for Kyle Fuller since we studied the 2018 Bears.
Right.
So not only did the Broncos get him, but essentially he hit free agency, and I want to say it was 34 minutes later he signed with the Broncos. So I think the Bears held on to Kyle Fuller for an extra day in hopes of making George Payton trade for him, because he knew that's where Kyle Fuller was going to go, and it didn't work. And George Payton called his bluff. Still got him on a 1 year deal. It's $9.5 million. It's one of the only big money this year deals, other than Von Miller, that George Payton essentially took on.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Yeah, if you look at their cap numbers from this year, Denver really doesn't owe a lot of big money in cap hits. I mean, they have three guys in double-digit cap hits right now: Von Miller, Juwan James, and Graham Glasgow. The rest is all, in the $8-9 million range. And Over the Cap doesn't have his deal updated yet.
No, I don't think I don't think they have the actual contract. I've actually looked. I looked at Over the Cap and I've looked at SpotTrack, because they'll both do this. But the fact that I don't think they have the contract, so they just haven't put it up yet. And that's why the cap estimates on both of them are slightly off too. So keep that in mind.
That range that was reported. It was around the $9 million range for a 1-year deal.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I agree with you. I tweeted out that, you know, it just made so much sense. I think it was even more of a no-brainer than the Bryce Callahan move a couple of years ago.
Agreed.
And fits so well because Denver does have Bryce Callahan too. And so now you have two of the three corners that Fangio had in that great 2018 defense. You have great pass rush like he did in that defense. And so these guys already know the system. And Kyle Fuller's still playing at a really high level. Like, I love his game. I think he fits really well, obviously, into Vic Fangio's system. He wasn't drafted into that. He was drafted by the Bears before Fangio got there. He was one of the few pieces of talent that Fangio had when he joined the Bears before he overhauled the entire roster and he hung on to Kyle Fuller. And, you know, Fuller became an all-pro under Vic Fangio. And so I think he'll provide a nice boost to the secondary from a ball hawking standpoint. I think he's smart in that regard. I think he baits quarterbacks. He reminds me a little bit of Darius Slay in that regard, in terms of the way that he baits. Obviously Slay's more of a man coverage guy and stuff, but the way that he baits quarterbacks. And he's a tough guy too. He can come up and tackle. And he fits. He just plays so well within this system. I just recall all the times that we watched Fuller and Bryce Callahan working together, mm-hmm. with Callahan in the slot and Kyle Fuller, and they're passing off receivers, and they knew it was a well-oiled machine back there. And so you pair that with Justin Simmons and Kareem Jackson now, and you throw Ronald Darby in the mix. I mean, Denver has a pretty dang good secondary now. And that's probably my second favorite move, was bringing back Kareem Jackson. That we're on the topic. I mean, I was getting a little worried once Jackson left. Like, I got the move. You know, he was due a lot of money, and he was getting older. And so I get why they moved on with him to begin with. And I think they had a pretty good idea that they could bring him back. It's similar to the way John Elway handled Shelby Harris last year. He let Shelby Harris test the market. He tested the market. There wasn't really, you know, it was a little bit soft for his services. And so they just brought him back at a cheap deal. And so Denver did a little bit of the same thing with Kareem Jackson. But now you have more continuity back there in the secondary. And you're not chasing a safety either in free agency or in the draft, which is, you know, where Denver was probably going to have to go to start looking for a starter if you don't bring back Kareem Jackson. So now, man, you've got so much experience in Fangio's defense now, with Justin Simmons locked up. You've got Kareem Jackson back there now. Callahan and Fuller, as long as Callahan's healthy, I mean, they should hit the ground running in the offseason. And so it'll just be about getting Ronald Darby up to speed. But, man, I'm really excited about this secondary. And if the pass rush can stay healthy, this defense can finally, I think, be what Vic Fangio really wants it to be, that he hasn't really had the horses to do in the last 2 years, because everybody just keeps getting hurt.
And one of the things I like, there's going to be people that'll complain about the fact that the Broncos are spending so much money on their secondary. I don't know when I can't tell you when it's going to happen, but I know it's going to happen, because people were complaining about the fact that Kareem Jackson and Justin Simmons were making that much money, like, together. But here's the thing. And again, like, you and I both know this, it's a passing league. The Broncos were in dime or nickel 75% of the time last year. Like, you can't have too many good corners in today's NFL.
Yeah. And you figure that they'll continue that trend.
Yes.
And you look at some of the health issues that they've had, and I would say that they're still not done at cornerback either.
I don't think so either.
I wouldn't be surprised seeing them go corner in the draft, and maybe even the first three rounds, depending on how it shakes out. And I would be happy with that. I think corner and safety are still on the menu from a draft pick perspective, to get guys into the system, get them trained up, and then they're ready to take over if perhaps Bryce Callahan, you know, continues to get hurt, maybe he doesn't work out, and then for sure Kareem Jackson's probably not going to stick around past this year. And so I think you still have to draft a safety, but you're now training young guys up. And then people have floated too, maybe you know, OJ Mudia was talked about when he first joined the team. He had played a little bit of safety at Iowa, and the coach at Iowa had said, you know, we loved him at safety. We just put him at corner because he was more talented, or we needed more help there because he was so talented he could play both. And so, you know, maybe he pulls a Kareem Jackson and switches from corner to safety and fills that spot. Who knows? I'm just speculating. But, you know, you have some options there for Denver. But I do think, you know, this is the time now to load up on – on young talent to kind of get them infused in once the older guys fade out next year.
Well, it's kind of like the Packers or Steelers approach in like past years where you draft a guy, but you're not necessarily drafting a guy because you need him to play right away. But you draft him, he's in the system and he's there and he's incubating. Essentially, he's trained up in the system. And honestly, that's one of the things I like so much about what the Broncos did is they don't have a need that is so great outside of again, in my opinion, outside of quarterback, that they have to address in the draft. If they get to the draft and they haven't done anything else. Again, yes, linebacker is a little bit of a question. Alexander Johnson is good. He has some questions in coverage. Josie Jewell is he's solid-ish. I would say he's adequate in coverage. So like if you can upgrade on him, I would prefer it. But again, if that's a big issue in 2021, they have the personnel that they could go dime more now. Like you move Bryce Callahan and Ronald Darby into the slot, and he has done it. You bring Ojemudia outside, you have a pretty strong dime group if you wanted to run that way, and then you have Alexander Johnson there. Or if they believe in Justin Cernod, like there's options, and that's what's great. I know there's a lot of talk about that George Payton might trade down. Honestly, especially now that Caleb Farley's medical stuff is like really kind of hit the fan. Like I had questions about it before, but like now that like he couldn't even work out because of his back, like I would say right now I would not take him outside of like the end of the first round just because you don't even know. Like you have no idea. Teams will probably have a better idea than I do, but like I would feel really anxious about that. But with that all in mind, like if they're not going quarterback, the value of the draft is actually to trade down.
Yeah. And it opens up things when you don't need that guy that you take in the first round to contribute right away. I mean, obviously you would like for him to, right? But you don't need him to. And so it opens the door even for
tackle.
You can take a tackle. Yeah. You read my mind. You don't know what Juwan James is going to do after this next year. And so you have the ability to put a guy under Munchak and develop him for right tackle for the next year. And, you know, you would, if you're hurting a cornerback, if you have a hole at safety, you really have a hard time pulling the trigger on that guy in the first round when you have other, you know, stronger needs. But now that those needs are filled, you can really go any which way.
There's this perpetual like thing on Twitter where people will say like every quarterback is not going to be available at 9. Penei Sewell is not going to be available at 9. Kyle Pitts is not going to be available at 9. The thing is, there's 5 quarterbacks, Penei Sewell and Kyle Pitts. That's 7 guys. Odds are one of them will be available. But I'm just saying, if Penei Sewell or Kyle Pitts falls to 9, like, I'm tempted. I'm very tempted.
It's kind of the math of last year's draft, and I know we said we wouldn't talk draft, but it's kind of...
Sorry, no, it's impossible not to.
Yeah. But I think it's kind of like the math of last year's draft. You started to look at the top and, like, the elite talent that was there, and you started doing the math, and you said, okay, one of these guys is going to be available for Denver. And so I think particularly once we get a little bit closer to the draft and teams start to – you get a little better feel for them declaring more of their true intentions, I think you will see that situation of, you know, there's perhaps one guy will potentially shake out there at 9. I mean, I'll throw another random scenario out there too, and this is one that you've brought up, Joe, is, you know, if you don't need that guy at number 9 to contribute right away – you have the opportunity to start to trade back and accumulate picks for next year, maybe to make a big move at quarterback. Cause that's been kind of Denver's big thing is if you're winning games, enough games where you don't fall in the top 5, you're kind of screwing yourselves out of the top quarterbacks every time. And so, you know, if there's a quarterback that's hanging around at 9 that Denver doesn't feel good about, but maybe somebody wants to come up and get, can you pick up an extra first round pick? Can you pick up something for next year that you can use as ammo to then say, okay, if Drew Lock doesn't work out, if our plan at quarterback doesn't work out in 2021, we're really geared up in 2022 to make a big move and have some draft capital to do it.
And so I wrote a piece for Mile High Report today. Yesterday, like if you guys are listening to this, it came out yesterday. I looked at all 32 teams and how likely they are to be chasing a quarterback. Because I do think that that's something we should probably, again, right now, we don't know. It looks like the Broncos could be chasing quarterbacks. So we have to approach it like that. And in that scenario, it pays to pay attention to who else is out there. And the thing is, there's probably 5 teams in the top 8 that make sense either to take a quarterback or to trade. But then you look behind Denver, there's the 49ers, Washington, Chicago, Pittsburgh, New Orleans, the Patriots. all those teams make sense. So, like, if Mac Jones falls to 9 and George Payton doesn't want Mac Jones, they could feasibly get more picks to move back. Like, it makes a lot of sense. And to your point, if the Broncos are – if George Payton is locked in this year, I really hope that that's what they do, because I don't think this roster is bad enough to fail to the top. And I didn't before free agency, but now that the Broncos have done this, unless they have like an epic injury rash like this year, and again, I'm not ruling it out, but if they're even like sort of healthy compared to last year, they're too good to lose into the top five. Like, they're going to need ammo to get into the top five if they're chasing quarterbacks next year. And so if that's the plan, they need to get extra picks to do it.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting point too, is that this team right now, and I think you've said this a couple times on Twitter, really is a quarterback away from making a big run at the division right now. I'm not saying to knock off Kansas City, but to make a big run at, I mean, obviously the wild card has been expanded. I think, you know, with a quarterback in tow, Denver has as good a case for the number two spot in the division as anybody. I haven't been a big fan of the Raiders' moves. I'm not sure what they're doing this offseason. And the Chargers have Justin Herbert, and they'll kind of go as he goes, right? And so does he get a sophomore slump, or does he continue to speed upwards like he did at the beginning of the season last year? And, of course, they have a new coach and stuff. And I like Brandon Staley, and I think he'll do well there. But I don't know how poised they are right away to come in and make a big splash in the division. And so if anybody's going to take on Kansas City, I think it's probably Denver with the defense that they're building. And so – and even if they don't, you know, maybe you still get swept by Kansas City, and but you do well outside of Kansas City and the rest of the division, the rest of the AFC. Denver is really, I mean, they have a really good roster. They could win games. It all just comes down to the quarterback position. I mean, I think offense as a whole, because they were so bumpy last year and you couldn't pin it all on the quarterback. Like, we talked about this. We looked at it, you know, the offensive line struggled, the young receivers struggled, but a lot of that, I think, is going to be ironed out with another year in the system. You get Cortland Sutton back. Like, the pieces around the quarterback are getting better this year. We don't know if the quarterback is going to get better this year. And so I think that's obviously why it's the biggest question mark. But with a quarterback, I mean, Denver's one of the, you know, kind of a contending team in the AFC.
Well, and here's the other part of it that really helps. Even if the Broncos can't beat Kansas City this year, they are playing the AFC North on their schedule this year and the NFC East. And then outside of that, if it goes to 17 games, and I think we all know that it's going to probably go to 17 games, they will end up getting the Detroit Lions. That's almost definitely a win, as long as, you know, fluky things happen. But like, I would assume right now that they will beat the Detroit Lions. The Lions look like they're set to try and tank out for next year. That's what it looks like they're doing. The Steelers are cap strapped. Like, they've lost talent and they just released Steven Nelson. So like, unless Big Ben is like, back in the day, Big Ben, like, they're probably in trouble. Like, the Broncos could be a playoff team this year if Drew Lock doesn't completely suck. I know that sounds really harsh, but the thing is, I expect Drew Lock to improve off last year, because he was awful last year. Like the question isn't if he's going to improve. The question is, how much is he going to improve? And that's where I'm skeptical. I don't think he's going to improve enough to be a good quarterback. But I think if he's even passable, the rest of the roster, as long as Pat Shurmur doesn't screw it up, like, I think they can win games with him.
Yeah, and so that does, I think, it changes your mindset going into next year's draft.
It has too, to.
You assume that, you know, you're not going to be in a spot to get your quarterback, so you've got to have a plan to get him outside of that. And, you know, like we've said a couple times, if you could be counting on Drew Lock to make that step. I think that's just as risky as any of the other moves that you could make at quarterback this year. But maybe that's their plan, is just see what you have in Drew Lock, and then you load up for 2022 and know that you still have most of your roster intact and see what you can do. But, I mean, Denver really is, when you look across this roster, which is exciting. But, again, I mean, I feel like we said this last year too when we were going into it, and obviously COVID and all of the injuries, and we didn't anticipate losing Von Miller and all of that, or Cortland Sutton. Like, this roster looked really good on paper last year too. And so, you know, hopefully all of it holds true. But this is even prior to the draft. Like, Denver is in a really good spot from a free agency standpoint, and then they still have to – they still have a lot of talent that they can add in the draft.
Well, and the thing – like, I feel like it makes sense that we're high on the roster at this point because we were high on the roster last year, because essentially what – and again, I know certain – there's certain local – I want to say the fans – and I might mispronounce his name – James Merrillat. He's been really vocal on Twitter, like, oh, we keep saying George Payton did this whole, like, all a lot. All he did is re-sign people and sign three free agents. Yeah, but that's because last year's roster was pretty damn good. They just got hurt. And then Drew Locke was disappointing. And again, I'm not trying to hate on him, but it's just, that's the facts. And so, yeah, it makes sense. Bring everyone back that you can. Hope to God you're healthier and improve the roster through the draft. Like, that's what Payton is doing right now. He's providing himself flexibility, and we're going to get to that in a second. But the other thing I really like that they did is the fact is, like, because they can go best player available, if they do go that way, even if it's not what I think that they should do, because again, I think if you're going locked in, you should trade back. But if they just decide to take the best player available at 9, odds are that's an impact player right away.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it gives George Payton some flexibility. I mean, obviously he has the scouting background and his plan is to really, he's going to be on the pro day circuit, and it really gives him a chance to not be hamstrung of, I have to draft this particular position group. He can really go find his guy that he really likes in this draft if he wants to stay at number 9 and say, let me just find the best guy that I can find at number 9. And so I really like that and as a new GM, I mean, he's got to like that too. Like, you have so much flexibility and you can kind of take your pick of who you want. I do want to come back to a quick point that you made, and this is, I want to caveat by saying, so far I've been a really big fan of George Payton. I like the move, and I've liked what he's done. I mean, obviously, we've been talking about it for the last half hour of all the stuff I liked. But I do think, I don't disagree with the point that that James made that you brought up, and I put this out as a little bit of a hot take in our chat the other day and got some flack for it. But really, and we said this going in, regardless of who it was, so whether it was George Payton or whatever, before the GM was really locked in and we knew who we were going to sign, is a GM wasn't going to come and sprinkle some magic fairy dust and fix the team. Like, the team was in a spot that, like, the moves were pretty clear that you needed to make. Like, they weren't in a spot like the Lions or something. It's like, you could go in a ton of different directions. You could blow up the roster. You could do all of this. Like, you need to do all of this. You need to clean house. Like, the coaching staff was in place.
In cap hell.
Yeah, there was talk of, okay, well, what does he come in and maybe try to clean house on the coaching staff? Well, I mean, the coaching staff was pretty solid. You want to continue to give them the time that they need, and I think have proven that they deserve. So, you know, they were in place. There was a lot of layups that I called it, and it doesn't mean that they were. I say that in a positive way. Like, George Payton walked into I think that's why he took this job. He walked into a really good situation, and so it's not that. I like the moves that he's done. But it's also not moves, like, it's not dissimilar from if John Elway had stayed here. And I say that as a compliment because I liked John Elway as a GM. And, like, I thought he did a good job on a lot of the moves that he did. And so it's just interesting that, like, I agree with a lot of what George Payton has done, but it's not some – he hasn't, you know, hit some magic GM button that has made all of this happen. He's done a lot of the, you know, same stuff that we assumed that he would do. And he's hit the layups that we expected him to make. He re-signed Justin Simmons. He brought back Von Miller. Like, that's easy stuff that you can do, and he made it happen. So kudos to him. But, you know, it's kind of what was expected at this point.
Well, as a casual basketball fan, I want to point out that the two most efficient shots in basketball are layups or shots right around the rim and three-pointers. And as of right now, the Broncos have taken a ton of layups, and they are well-positioned to take a three-pointer. If that's what they decide to do.
And it's March Madness.
So it feels like it's
coming. I like it.
It's on brand. Yeah. But but the other thing is, I feel like, and again, I think this is kind of a tangent. I feel like we need to, like, validate the fact that George Payton is good by bashing John Elway. When it's like, yeah, John Elway's made some mistakes, most notably quarterback. But as of now, like, if we're going to try and start to sprinkle all this praise on George Payton, he hasn't done anything at quarterback yet. And that's okay. Like, I'm not saying any, like, but here's my thing. And I didn't get, like, I want to touch on this. the fact that they didn't do anything in free agency at quarterback to this point, to me, does suggest that they're looking to find somebody else to take over for Drew Lock. Because if they were dead set on competition for Drew Lock, like, quote unquote, like actual competition, like if they were looking at somebody who could actually push Drew Lock, you would expect them to bring in somebody who either has starting experience recently or offers the promise to be a potential starter if need be. Look at free agency. It's Alex Smith if his leg is still intact. And again, I hope it is. Or Chase Daniel, who's a career backup. After that, you're starting to get pretty far down the list of guys. Like, you don't want Nick Bolin starting games. Like, he can, but you're not bringing him in to start games. And granted, like, this is why, like local reports keep bringing up the trade candidates. But there was reports from NFL Network's James Palmer that said, George Payton is not going to look to bring in a guy who's just a marginal improvement. So I really doubt he's going to go out and trade a high draft pick to bring in Sam Darnold. Like, we had Tim Jenkins on. He said, you bring in Sam Darnold, Sam Darnold's probably the guy. Like, that's, you don't bring him in hopes that he can compete and then be the backup. And it's probably a similar story with Gardner Minshew. Maybe not because he was a six-round pick, but I would think that you bring him in, it's going to be pretty contentious competition. And to the fact that they haven't done that yet, either A, might just be because the cost to trade for these guys is too high, or because Payton has his eyes set on something bigger.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Yeah, and I think we said this, regardless of who the GM was going to be, is that what they did at quarterback was going to define their success in Denver. As the same way that it's been since John Elway came, his success has been defined by what he's been able to do at quarterback and obviously what he's put around that quarterback in terms of some of the teams that he built with Peyton Manning. But over these last several years, John Elway's kind of litmus test has been, you know, obviously he improved in the draft. They brought in some good talent. I like a lot of stuff that they've done, but, you know, that quarterback is still a massive hole on the roster. And so George Payton, that was going to be the big challenge coming in for Payton, is you would evaluate him by what he did at quarterback. And I'm not saying he needs to solve it this year, right? Because it's a big question mark. But that will be kind of the ultimate test, I think, for George Payton is long to me, the two things. Long term, what does he do overarching for the culture? Because I think that's a big piece of what the GM does. Like, a lot of people get fixated on, oh, who do you draft and what are the moves that you make and who do you sign in free agency? And I made this joke in the Mile High Report chat, like there's not a lot of signings out there that you couldn't like crowdsource from Twitter and still do a pretty good job. Like the signings that Denver made so far, and I'm not saying they're bad. I'm not knocking or diminishing.
But they're not outlandish. They're not crazy moves. They all made sense to most of us.
Yeah, and they all made sense, and everybody said, yeah, I would have done that, you know, and so it's not like that's not why you're bringing a guy like George Payton in. You're bringing a guy like George Payton in for long-term stability for the franchise, building a culture, and then the draft scouting and quarterback stuff. And so I think that's the piece that we still have yet to see from him of what can he do in the draft and maybe uncovering some gems and putting a scouting background to work, but then what is he going to do at the quarterback position?
Well, and to your point too, and again, we do this, like I do this too. We all get caught up on the draft success. I actually just wrote a piece that will drop today with this pod. The best teams like throughout like the last 20 years in draft hit rate is like 60%. So, like, everyone still, has misses. Like, we get fixated on these big misses, but it's like every team has them. Bill Belichick goes through cold streaks, and there is a certain degree of luck involved. Like, you'll get some where it's the human factor. Some guys just aren't cut out to make it in the NFL. Like, it happens. Like, you can't get too caught on that. So, I do agree with you, because the thing with Peyton is he has to get quarterback right, because that and the fact that, like, everything else, if he can set the culture, you're setting the Broncos up for the next 10-plus years.
Yeah, and I would say, too, that the draft success follows directly along with longevity and like system stability as well. Like, and so that's the other thing that you're hoping George Payton brings, is that he's not going to recycle coaches constantly, that, you know, he has a long-term vision for the future, and they want to build some type of stability across the roster so that you can start to bring in guys. And, you know, you have misses here and there, but for the most part, you've got a you've got a process, and you've got a development pipeline that you can plug these guys into, and that drastically improves your hit rate, if it were. It makes it look like you're picking better guys, but really you're developing the guys that you did pick better. And that's, to me, is 50% of drafting, is what do you do with them after you draft them?
And so on that, like, kind of like related to this, I want to bring this up because this is something I thought was interesting when I was looking at the 1-year contracts and all the flexibility and stuff. The Broncos have 32 players, if you count Bradley Chubb, the Broncos have 32 players who have contracts that expire after this year as of now. And I'm not going to read all 32 because there's a lot. And some of these guys are like bubble guys near the bottom of the roster. But the big ones, it's like Von Miller, Melvin Gordon, Bryce Callahan, Kyle Fuller, Cortland Sutton, Royce Freeman, Tim Patrick, Alexander Johnson, Kareem Jackson. Like, if things don't go as planned this year, next year's roster is probably going to look very, very different as it starts to change more towards Peyton's guys. And again, I'm not saying that to be an alarmist. I'm just saying, like, that's kind of how he set this up. Like, this is the year for Fangio to prove that he is the right coach. And I hope, and again, I hope he does. But if not, Peyton is able to then set the stamp and kind of move towards whatever else, like the next, like whatever he's doing next. And yeah, all these guys can be brought back, like probably, you know.
Yeah, and maybe that what's next is everything stays the same from a coaching standpoint, but you're refreshing the roster just because that's what's going to happen. I mean, you look across those names, and I mean, I think Von Miller is a guy that, depending on how he plays this year and what his health looks like, you want him to stay around in Denver as long as possible, you know, potentially at a different price. I don't think Melvin Gordon will stay. I think Denver probably, as much as I hate it, I think Denver will probably go draft running back in the draft, maybe even in the higher rounds. I hope they look at it in the middle rounds. I think he will see a running back drafted.
If they draft a running back way too high, I will be mad, but I will be slightly less mad if it's Javonte Williams. Because I effing love Javonte Williams.
But I would say, you know, look for that. Obviously, if you're looking at players in the draft, I think running back has to be on that. Bryce Callahan, I think it comes down to health. Kyle Fuller will be interesting. I think that's why cornerback is still very much on the table in the draft, is you're potentially moving on from two corners next year, and so you want to have that young, fresh pipeline. I think Cortland Sutton is a guy that you have to keep around and pay, and so maybe that's where some of that cap rollover comes into. And then Alexander Johnson is an interesting one. I think he's another guy that, you know, obviously you would want to probably hang on to. But other than that, I think there's flexibility to either bring some of those guys back on the cheap, or you draft a replacement or something like that. There's not a lot of key names past that. And so I will throw out this too. It's interesting. Bringing back Kareem Jackson changed this a little bit, but before Kareem Jackson, Von Miller was the oldest person on the team, and he was the only team member outside of kicker and punter. I think McManus is still under 30, but the punter's over 30. But Von Miller was the only player over 30 on the roster. Now Kareem Jackson's on the roster. He's over 30. But that's a really young team for Denver. And you look at some of those guys maybe aging off again next year if Kareem Jackson goes on, you're getting even younger. And so that's just an interesting observation as we look across the roster, is that Denver is really young and poised to, I think, you know, stay good for a while if they can get the right pieces in place.
Well, and that's one of the things I really like about the free agent signings, is that all these guys, outside of Kareem Jackson and Von Miller being brought back, all these other guys were in their prime. Like Ronald Darby, like you said, was 27. Shelby Harris is right in that age range. Justin Simmons. So like these guys are all in the middle of the best part of their athletic career. Like, like data says that this is when they're going to be playing at their peak, and the Broncos have them. Like, this is, and the other part of it is, like you mentioned, the fact that the cap's exploding. It's either going to happen next year or the year after, where the cap starts to really jump. So like Cortland Sutton's deal next year might, like, it'll. Here's what I expect. I expect it to get floated as like, oh man, he's asking for so much money. But it's like Cortland Sutton is one of the few true X receivers in the NFL. if he's healthy. If he can get back to 2019 form, he's a $20 million receiver. Like, there's not a doubt in my mind. What's going to be interesting is if they try and juggle that between him and Tim Patrick, because Tim Patrick is very good. He's not a $20 million receiver. Like, Courtland Sutton is a difference maker in a way that he draws double teams. He makes everyone better. That's really hard to do. Most teams in the league don't have that guy. But yeah, if the cap's exploding, like, they're going to be able to retain him.
And maybe, and we can talk this at a different time, but I think I'm just more down on Tim Patrick than the rest of Broncos country. I want to bring him back. I want to pay money to bring him back. Like, I think he's fine, but not impressed with some of his play last year.
Let's have this discussion.
Okay. We got 5 minutes before we have to wrap. Let's do it.
My thing is this. I think Courtland Sutton is an A-plus receiver if he's healthy. Like, he's a top 10 receiver. I would pay him, and I don't care. Like, Tim Patrick can go. And I like Tim Patrick. The big thing is, if you're not going to pay Courtland Sutton, Tim Patrick gives you at least an overlapping skill set to step in and be like a B-level X receiver.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say that, like, that's probably the role that Tim Patrick serves. But other than that, like, I think he doesn't serve it as, like, above any, like, replacement level that you could just come. I think you could easily, if you needed to replace Courtland Sutton or, like, have hedging for leverage or something if the contract talks got, you know, a little bit shaky, I think you could easily replace Tim Patrick on the roster. Maybe it's just I have a bad taste in my mouth after watching some of the film, particularly I think midway through the season, is just I felt like he quit on routes way too much. And maybe it was miscommunication, and maybe it was, I mean, you know, the offense was struggling, and obviously the quarterback was having issues too. And so, you know, I don't want to hold that against him too much, but I was just not impressed by a lot of what I saw from Patrick last year. And so we'll see what happens. But, you know, I don't hate that he's on the roster, obviously. I think he's a good player, but I want to.
You would take Courtland Sutton over him every day of the week.
Yeah. Oh, Courtland Sutton for sure. But I think you could easily get by with, like, I don't know that he brings a unique enough skill set. Like, obviously he matches in body type and he plays more of that X role like Courtland Sutton. But I think you could easily get away with if you wanted to, you know, things got shaky with Sutton from a contract standpoint, you could still just roll with Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler and somebody else, as opposed to saying, oh, we have to have a Tim Patrick on the outside if Courtland Sutton doesn't stick around.
And this is actually kind of a good segue into, like, draft stuff down the road, because here's the thing. The fact that last year's wide receiver class was, like, historically good, and then this year's wide receiver class from all, like, everybody I've talked to is historically good. I haven't actually not studied this receiver class because the Broncos are not going to be taking one high. I'm aware of it, but I haven't been studying it. But what I know of it is quite good. It's going to be interesting how that impacts, like, dynamics going forward, because, again, like, the reason running backs don't get paid is because they're really easy to replace. If that starts to happen with receivers, with spread offense being so prevalent in high school and college, like, we might end up seeing that. And 5 years from now, we might end up regretting the fact that the Broncos are spending so much capital on receivers. Not to say, again, I like our receivers. I'm not saying it like that, but just something to keep in mind. So last thing before I let you go, because I can't let you go without this, because it'll be a minute before I talk to you again. Where do you think the Broncos are going at quarterback? Like, gun to your head, you had to make a guess right now, and if you're wrong, you're wrong, but you had to make a guess. What do you think is going to happen?
I think Denver ends up rolling with Drew Lock and seeing what he can do. And I don't hate the idea of actually bringing in Alex Smith, like, that name particularly. Like, I like Alex Smith. I think he's a great locker room guy. I think he's smart. I think he could probably honestly beat out Drew Lock right now because of the way that I think he could potentially fit into Shermer's system really well. And so who knows what will happen, but I do think that Alex Smith would be a guy you could bring in. Drew Lock is the quarterback that you want to see how he can improve. Maybe Alex Smith can help him along. And maybe it's a little bit of that, you know, Patrick Mahomes sat under Alex Smith. And so you hope that a little bit of that rubs off. But yeah, I think that's what ends up happening with Denver. I think that they maybe swing for the fences on Watson, or they already tried that. And, you know, I think there's too much there to speculate on what's going to happen. And so to me right now, like, I don't want to go there right now with the Watson stuff, right, with what's happening. And so I think Drew Lock is the guy that they try to see what he has and see if he can improve with a full offseason under his belt and all the weapons back at his disposal. And then, you know, midway through the season, you could still pivot to Alex Smith if you needed to, if things aren't going well. So I think that's what I don't know that I agree with it or that's what I would do for sure, but I think that's probably what's going to happen.
Cool. Locked in, baby.